And actually, that seems at least to raise the possibility that what happens is if you look at that and you look at the scribbled vellum, if you're not literate, what you fundamentally see there is flagellation.
Yes, though, I mean, we shouldn't underestimate the ability of differently literate people in the period to recognize their names, to be taught to recognize Latin formulae that are the crucial legal language in a contract they're making. In other words, there's partial literacy, which is essentially, again, I'm just sort of parroting back to the injustice, is something that I think alters the meaning of this moment on stage. One other thing I'd say, just before I go, is that this figure is also freighted with a sort of long legal history in terms of viva vox. In other words, the primacy of voice over writing. And there's a sort of a potential that when Jack's mouth is ordained as the parliament, so that what he says is law, which is enacted very comically on stage. So this is a heavily freighted moment.
Just so to clarify, sheep in this moment or the lamb is a metaphor. It's nothing. I mean, maybe the sheep exists when he's looking at it for him, but it's always going to be a metaphor. It's inescapably a metaphor. Is that right? It's always a document.
It's something brutally material in this moment. He looks at the parchment and he doesn't see a parchment. He sees a constellation of the remains of variously animated things. Sheep, wax. He sees bee product. Think of the bee labor that goes into, that goes into producing the wax. And so, if you like, it's a quasi-ecological moment in terms of the description that he mounts. It's an ecological description of a piece of parchment in minute form. And I'm interested in sort of adding that to as a sort of tariff on pastoral. So I'm interested in the way in which sheep serve as a point of contact between two radically opposed genres. Not radically opposed, but two sort of parallel genres, utopia and pastoral.
Well, I just wanted to—is Rob's point actually—is that part of your argument? Because I was fascinated with that, with the idea that he would see sheep and not writing.
Yeah.
So, and your answer
makes sense that there were
various kinds
right.
of literacy
yes,
and so forth. But if he what he sees is not the writing, then that becomes in a way an even that helps your argument. I think it seems to make that explicit that he doesn't see.
Yeah.
The writing, he sees the effects of this strange thing that's written on it. It's like going to Hong Kong and seeing signs, but what you see, if you don't know Chinese, is you see color and shape. You don't
right.
see the signification. That
the
and the magical power of that
right.
to punish,
well,
which
this,
is what
right.
it gets back
yeah.
to, which
yeah.
goes back
to
that punishment of the innocent.
Right. I mean, there becomes an equivalent, then a set of equivalencies are mounted in this moment whereby violence, sort of the lamentable thing is this is the skin of a dead lamb, and then the other lamentable thing is that it's the skin of an innocent lamb, which makes it the passion. And then it becomes that's equated with Jack's own experience of the hands of parchment. There are a series of equivalents being built as he builds an alternate metaphor or figure out of this this piece of parchment, and that articulates what parchment feels like to Jack. Precisely that. So yes, thank you. That
so is
really
it a, is
helpful.
It a refusal of language then, with all of the with the emphasis on scriveners and lawyers? I mean, is it really explicitly a refusal of language and being
Jack,
able to see the object,
the
to see the animal?
Right. Okay. I see where this is coming from. The is it a refusal of language? It could be a refusal in the way the play appears to in the way it plays out. It's a refusal of writing.
Right.
Right.
That's what I meant. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's It depends how you understand what writing is. It's a refusal of one form of writing. But it's, for me, the record of alternate forms of writing that are traces of which remain in the archive that Shakespeare and Nash were reading. Hall, whose overall whose treatment of the rebels is a bit more sympathetic than you find it in the other. Did you want
to? I guess maybe you've addressed it. It just struck me that the last half of the sentence was getting left out. That it was the sentence was being treated like, you know, isn't it, you know, sort of something strange or awful about this piece of parchment undoing a lamb, where it's about it undoing me.
Yeah.
And then in the second part also about the wax, the loss to the animal and the role of the animals is he's doing almost what Moore does with his voracious.
Absolutely.
Sheep.
Yeah.
They are standing, as you said, as metaphors, as synecdoche for the power of contract, for the commercial relations and the contractual documents that give them legal force to undo a guy like Jack Hay.
I think Guy Richard Halpern calls them a dummy subject. In other words, they create a space where it becomes possible to for Calvin Morton to understand, well, there are two things. I mean, it becomes a figure that makes human suffering available, seeable for Calvin Morton. And I think we should be. I think given what Moore's writing, there's no scandal here that he's not recovering animal agency. He's not interested in sheep. He is interested in sheep, but only in terms of their use value. Utopia, essentially, for Thomas More, is a well-used sheep. The other thing is that rhetorically, Hephaestus is turning the dialogue into a monologue. It's a conversational gambit to shut someone up. We're very 2 Henry VI focused.
Before we run out of time, are there other questions? I can just ask a broad question, which is whether you touch a little bit at the very end with the exclusion of the ideas of nature and environment and a little bit at the beginning, but is there anything else you'd be willing to say about what you think the work of eco-criticism has to do with the project of ecological protection?
I think that I hate pronouncing it quite that way. The honest answer is I don't know. But what I expect, in other words, I think that one of the things that the humanities is faced with is, on the one hand, its apparent irrelevance on an Anglo-American campus. What I'd say is that the sort of the guiding frame for me in thinking about the journal, I sort of began by trying to think about sort of what is the expertise of the literary critic. What do you bring to the table? For a long time, I pretended I was a sociologist. And one of the things that trying to take on ecology as a writing practice, as a description that aspires to no reduction, is I found myself returned to the oldest inhuman technology. Language as a tool for implanting memories and in persons externally, so that they appear to arise internally, and to rhetoric as a mode of forensic persuasion for creating memories in collectives, in other words, ideology. So I'd say that for me, if you know Bruno Latour's We Have Never Been Modern, you sort of think about the figure of the Parliament of Things as some kind of putative, radical democratic assembly in which persons serve as prosthetic mouthpieces for things, The ozone layer is the privileged example in this because it's so balkanized that, as we all know, it's very hard to actually say anything about the ozone layer that anyone would agree to. So in other words, in that parliament, it's very easy to imagine what an economist, a meteorologist, sort of anyone